This program is supported by Cosmos Records. The people at Going 180 Media might drink expired milk, but they support this program, so it's all good. This program is supported by Kansai Music Conference and the Kansai Music Conference Canada.
Welcome to the recording session. Have a seat. Have a cup of tea. Have a glass of water. We're about to start. Hope you enjoy the collaboration. Hope you become familiar with the sounds and the intenseness of expression. Just sit back and relax. This is about getting up in the morning and feeling good with a new day and a new chance to create. Okay? So may the deserts have water. May the storms calm down. May the snows lighten up. May the babies laugh. And may your ears remain open. So, in poetry, in music, in knowledge, in peace, security, and longevity, come on and step into the time flow with us. Come on, let's go, let's go.
You're listening to CKLN. This is Saturday Morning Live. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. And on today's show, we have no idea of what we are going to do. We're going to have Ayinde Blake. A bunch of people have canceled on us, and we should have Herb Boyd on at high noon to talk about Black Music Month and also to continue the discussion on Manny Mirabal's book, Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention. But right now, I believe we have Mumia Abu. We're going to go with Ayinde Blake, and then we'll deal with Mumia Abu Jamal. And Ayinde Blake, how are you doing?
I'm well, Norman. I'm well.
And today is, hold the phone 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Before you talk, we wanted to play something that you might get a kick out of. Number six, you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, and this is Ayinde Blake. We're going to play a brief, just a little interlude, and then we'll talk to Ayinde. And you're listening to CKLN. This is Saturday Morning Live, and we are attempting to play a theme song, and then we'll talk to Yende Blake. This is Saturday Morning Live, and we will see if we can get this lined up and be with Yende momentarily. You are listening to CKLN and Ayinde Blake. You remember that song?
I remember it well, yeah.
All right. What's happening movie-wise?
All right. Well, today I will be reviewing Jumping the Broom.
Came out Jumping the Broom, okay.
Mid to early May.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it's a fairly new film released. It was directed by Salim Akil. It stars Laz Alonso, Paula Patton, Angela Bassett, and Loretta Devine.
Mm-hmm.
The film shows two black families of extreme and contrasting social status. In one hand is the affluent, well-off, educated, and wealthy. The other is low to middle-class family, rooted deeply in culture and tradition. A marriage brings these families together, bringing the worst out of the in-laws of the bride and groom. Laz Alonso and Paula Patton play the happy couple, with the clashing mothers of Loretta Devine and Angela Bassett, respectively. The film clocks just over an hour and a half mark. To begin with, the first hour plays like a Tyler Perry family movie, minus Madea. After that, things really do get moving, with the constant dueling between Loretta Devine and Angela Bassett. It makes up for a fun little movie. All in all, Jumping the Broom is a decent movie, but doesn't stand out amidst the crowd of other black-oriented family wedding films. And for its inability for not picking up the pace until an hour in, the film gets a 6.5.
Jumping the Broom is getting married, apparently. I mean, not apparently, but it's I don't know if it's African or African-American or both, but it's, do they deal with that in terms of, do they explain that or? Probably not.
It's very brief. The only mention of that sort of, it's more rooted in the African-American culture of some aspects.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the title, there seems to be, within the character of, Loretta Devine's character, she's very deeply rooted in the fact that the wedding should have a broom for it should be jumped over and whatnot.
Right.
And it seems to be a clash because one family doesn't feel it necessary to honor that tradition while the other family chooses to carry on with it. And that seems to be a friction that really adds to tension when the film goes on.
So it's like a sort of a class cultural type of situation.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Right. And I know you were born here, but in the Caribbean, in terms of the wedding situation, is there anything comparable to Jumping the Broom?
Comparable?
Don't know.
No, I have to ask around.
Well, I know that as you know, African people in the Western Hemisphere, it appears that those of us that came to North America, we retain less of the traditional African situation, say, than people that were taken to the Caribbean. For example, that whole question of nine nights is just, that's straight out of Ghana, you know. And, you know, a lot of our culture when I say our culture in North America is, you know, it's a lot of improvisation as well as, you know, what we retain. I know that, like the Panthers, when they got married, they used to use their rings came from the women came from planes that were bombed in Vietnam. That was a tradition. And then I know my nephew was married and he had a traditional Yoruba wedding. So it's a lot of different things taking place. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No. That was pretty much that in a nutshell. And other news, I was pretty shocked to hear about Gil Scott-Heron's passing.
Right.
Yeah. He was
62,
yeah.
Yeah, are you familiar with Gil Scott-Heron's work?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it, yeah. It's interesting because it just seemed that it wasn't until recently, like very, very recently, that momentum started building on, again, with his work, because he released his last album, I think, in October. It was called I'm New Here.
Right.
And with it, it seemed that, especially in North America, there seemed to be an interest building in him, especially within the indie music scene.
Right.
Especially, there was some notable record remixer that actually chose to collaborate with him and do like a bit of a complimentary album along with what he did.
Yes.
And there was a bit of a following, and then even I think Kanye West sampled one of his tracks in his recent album as well.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, just to hear about it, I was really shocked to hear this because there was a really big buildup of hearing who what he did, and it's so interesting as to how relevant the words that he had spoken from the 70s, from Smalltalk and 125th on Lennox, it's so prevalent as it is today, and how it's that sort of theme and what that those words are not being said today, especially in hip-hop, even though he's regarded as the godfather of the creator of hip-hop.
Right. All right, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So next July, I guess we'll be hollering at you.
All right.
All right, take care.
Will do.
And we have been speaking with Ayinde Blake, and we're going to come back with commentaries from Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Scott Heron, Radical Poet, 1949-2011. At half past 50, one should hardly be surprised at death, especially natural death. But we're often betrayed by feelings such as these, as exampled by the recent passing of Gil Scott Heron, a pioneering poet of the 70s and 80s who, with his remarkable baritone, made the smooth transition from protest poet to singer, succeeding brilliantly at both. As poet, his phrasings were often backed up by the percussive power of drums. His later works were backed by a full band of talented musicians, notably pianist Brian Jackson, leader of the aptly named Midnight Band. His poems and songs were often scathing political critiques, which were powerful cultural commentaries, especially in the Watergate era and after Nixon's resignation. Gil Scott Heron's work, like The Revolution Will Not Be Televised and Living in the Bottle, neatly threaded the needle between the political and the personal and enjoyed considerable airplay on black and college radio stations. Like many artists, especially of the jazz era, Gil Scott Heron reportedly utilized controlled substances to feed his head. His influence had a powerful impact on the rap genre, which would succeed him. Gil Scott Heron was 62. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Echoes of Empire. In the wake of the Osama killing in the outskirts of Islamabad, Pakistan, grumblings have been heard by U.S. think tankers and various other talking heads about Pakistan's alleged double game with the U.S. and its alleged duplicity in the so-called War on Terror. But such a reading is notoriously short-sighted and one-sided, and it ignores the old maxim that nations have no friends, only interests. And all nations play double and sometimes triple games. Oh, they talk of allies and friends, but they are but words. They mean subjects or servants. Consider this when next you hear some suit blab about the War on Terror. On September 10th, 2002, a Democratic congressman named Jim McDermott said the following on CNN's Crossfire. But you've got to remember that, of American policy, we put the Taliban there. We gave the money. We funded the Taliban through the Pakistanis. And all that money, we could have cut off that money and stopped what was going on. We knew what was going on there. All we wanted was a stable, quiet Afghanistan so we could put a pipeline down there, through there. That's really what we were up to. This means that the Taliban, the forerunner of Al-Qaeda, was a creation of the CIA, the ISI, Pakistani Intelligence, and MI6, British Intelligence. Pakistan wanted it as a buffer against Pashtun power in Afghanistan and as a potential tool of war against India. And the Americans and British wanted a weapon against the Soviet-backed government in Kabul. Have we forgotten how an addle-pated Ronald Reagan compared the Taliban Mujahideen to our founding fathers because of their ferocity against the Russians? Stephen Kinzer, in his 2006 book, Overthrow, quotes an Afghan secularist telling the Americans, "For God's sake, you're financing your own assassins." The Taliban gave birth and sustenance to Al-Qaeda, and the rest is history. The wars since then have also been of U.S. creation for dominance, not democracy, for oil markets, not free markets, for resources, not for human rights. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Neo-colonialism? As the Arab Spring mutates into the Arab Summer, the forces of the distant colonial past arise, like vampires from their crypts. European and American exploiters, using UN resolutions and NATO as fig leaves, rain death and desolation in the name of protecting civilians. That these same forces were, just months ago, in bed with the very same dictators that they today denounce, shows us that something else is at work. One thing for sure, two things for certain, it ain't the protection of Arab civilians. This may be seen when Palestinian kids lob stones at Israelis armed with automatic weapons and tanks. The West damns the stone throwers, not the bullet shooters. When the American president dared to even mention the borders of 1967 as a negotiating point, the Israeli president, Benjamin Netanyahu, essentially told him in diplomatic language, go to hell. At times such as these, one sometimes wonders, which is the world power and which is the satellite? At the much-heralded Cairo speech, June 2009, U.S. President Barack Hussein Obama charmed the elites of the Muslim world by proclaiming, to applause, any world order that elevates one nation or group of people over another will inevitably fail. Clearly, he didn't mean Israel, which is allowed to bomb Palestinians from F-14s, build sky-high walls in Palestinian areas, and generally occupy and settle on their territory at will, with the U.S. rarely raising its voice. The late French general and president, Charles de Gaulle, once said, since a politician never believes what he says, he's surprised when others believe him. After the Cairo speech, with its flowery promises of a new relationship with the Muslim world, hopes rose like kites in spring. 2 years later, after the waste of Iraq and Afghanistan, the rough riding through Pakistan, and the bombing of babies in Tripoli, and the thrill is gone. After all is said and done, it's about what it's always been about, oil. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Soul music. From the time the first Africans touched this new world, they brought their rhythms and beats along. In every land they lived in, new music emerged. Songs fueled by love and longing, fear and dread, tribulation and triumph, the long thirst for freedom. They danced in chains, not in happiness, but in the struggle for survival. Their shackles became the tinkling of new melodies. And while the beat of the drum became a capital crime, their bare feet banged against earth, and they sang songs to ease their pains and to pass their days of bondage. From Afrobeat to Zouk, literally, from A to Z, black musicians have made the world dance to their distinctive tunes. From mournful dirges of Negro spirituals to ragtime to jazz to rhythm and blues, soul, black rock, disco, salsa, reggae, reggaeton, merengue, rap, and to the next music form that emerges, Africa has shown her many faces and voices in startling creativity. June is Black Music Month, but not an hour passes that isn't filled with the music of black people, causing hearts to soar and heads to bob. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Curtis Mayfield was born on June 3, 1942. Mayfield was an overseas African singer, songwriter, producer, guitarist, and entrepreneur. He is best known for his anthems with Sam Gooden and Fred Cash, The Impressions. The Wailers, which featured Neville O'Reilly Livingston, Peter Tosh, and Bob Marley, were inspired by The Impressions. Mayfield became the king of the soundtrack. He is best known for the soundtrack to the film Superfly. Mayfield and The Impressions sang at Free Huey P. Newton rallies. Angela Davis requested a meeting with Mayfield when she was incarcerated in the 70s. He honored Angela's request. CKLN's African Caucus salutes Curtis Mayfield during Black Music Month. June and every month is Black Music Month on CKLN.